Everything around you right now is considered inventory.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hey everyone, welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP, and with me on the show today, my special guest is Deborah. Deborah, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Tom. Sure. My name is Deborah Dole. I love supply chain. My focus these days is exploring how supply chain can help accelerate the transition to a circular economy. So that's a lot of what I spend my time on. I'm a co-founder of a podcast called The Supply Chain Revolution, and I also work at GE Digital. I'm really excited about today because one of my most favorite topics in the whole world is inventory, which people usually laugh at. But that's why, Tom, why you've asked me here today. So I just could not be more excited about today's session.
Indeed. Yes. Thank you for bringing that up, Deborah, because I was asked on a subreddit on supply chain to do an episode on inventory management, and it's something I know very little about. So I thought, who better to get on the show to talk about it than yourself? I mean, we had a podcast a few months back with Cherie, your co-conspirator from Supply Chain Revolution. And you happened to mention on that inventory management was one of your things. And that stuck in my head because it sounded a bit odd. So when I was asked to do one on inventory management, you were the go-to person. And thank you for agreeing to come on the show.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So what is inventory management?
Perfect. So glad you asked. If we take supply chain in its absolute simplest form, it has two parts. One part is what I'll call the pipe. So we often call these lanes in supply chain. So if we imagine we want to take an item, let's say a pineapple, because I'm thinking tropics today, you know, wouldn't that be nice? And we want it to go from point A to point B. So let's say Costa Rica to where you are in Europe, Tom.
Okay.
So, and I found out actually when I was thinking about pineapples yesterday that Costa Rica supplies 75% of Europe's pineapples.
Oh, wow.
This is a very real example. So we might think it just goes from a straight line from the farm to the supermarket. But of course, that's not really how it works. It'll go from the farm to a port, get on a boat, maybe a plane, go over to a major port in Europe, get on a train, get on a truck or a lorry, and eventually find its way to you. So there's this pipe, and there are different pipes that are all connected. And there's a whole discipline around that pipe. Can we see inside the pipe? How fast does it go? Is it flexible to change mid-pipe, et cetera? So that's what I would call the first major part, the pipe. The second major part, of course, is what goes through the pipe.
Okay.
And in this case, it's pineapples.
Uh-huh.
But those pipes can also support coffee, sugar, electronics, whatever else might want to go on those lanes. And this realm of what's inside the pipe is just incredibly interesting to me. And I'll share a little bit about why as we keep talking.
Okay.
And we can hear clues about all of this around us as we listen to the news. So, for example, we hear a lot about disruption in global supply chain these days. And they're talking about either the pipe or the inventory that goes through the pipe. So, for example, we've had port closures. That's the pipe. We've had factories closing. That's the inventory. Last time we talked, I think they had just tragically had to dump milk in America. That's inventory.
Right.
That's an inventory side of it. And so when we can think about why are items out of stock right now, because it's wildly frustrating, right? You're used to being able to go to the store and have something there and you go and it's not there. And so, of course, again, it can be either the pipe or it can be the inventory.
Right.
And we know the whole point of supply chain, the whole reason that we exist is to meet demand.
Mm-hmm.
So supply chain is there to meet demand. And when we fail to do that, it's a huge bummer. But I think about this a lot these days. And if we assume for a second that the pipe is intact, which isn't always the case, but let's just assume that it is, and really look at the inventory. Now, something that really is going to show my true nerdism here is that every part has a set of behaviors, almost like a personality. And as an inventory manager, we learn the personalities, and I'm rolling my own eyes as I say this, but we really learn the personalities of each of these different parts. And so if we take something like hair clippers, I don't know, Tom, if you encountered this, all the many short-haired people in my life recently have encountered about a month ago, it was really difficult to find clippers to buy for home use.
Sure, sure. Like webcams as well, a couple of weeks earlier.
Yeah, exactly, webcams. And what's interesting is that we know that there's changes in inventory, and it can either be changes to the demand side or it can be changes to the supply side. Either one can go up or down. In this case, fewer people were going to get their hair cut, but they still needed to get their hair cut. So the knock-on effect was that they needed, of course, to buy clippers.
Sure.
Or a webcam, because all of a sudden everybody wants to see their colleagues. But the thing is, and I know people know this, so it's maybe silly to say it out loud, it's not like these items are made in the back room, the store where they're sold.
Sure.
There's a whole long supply chain behind them, and they come from different parts, and it's gotten much, much longer in recent years, global supply chains have. The parts come from different places, the parts are made from different materials, and those materials come from different places. And the longer your supply chain is, the more disruptive a change somewhere is going to be felt. So if we have a normal little wiggle for demand, it's amplified throughout the supply chain, and something little happens and everybody reacts. And we know the further back in the supply chain, that little wiggle gets bigger, bigger reaction. But that's only from a little wiggle.
Right.
We're talking about a massive change. And so that's causing sustained stockouts. And while supply chains try to sort out the type of demand they're really trying to react to, that entire pipe is emptied. So if it takes, let's say, 3 full months from raw material to clipper on shelf, all of that in-process inventory is going to be emptied, and you have to rebuild that up again. So now we have these extended periods of out of stock. Now, what I think is really interesting is those clippers are made up of different parts, plastics, metals, you know, switches, and they're not the only ones that use plastics and metals and switches.
Sure.
So now we start to really get into what I think is a fascinating sort of web of complexity of all the different parts and personalities of parts out there of inventory that want all these different elements. So it's a very long answer to your question, Tom, but this inventory of just everything around you right now is considered inventory. It's fascinating.
Okay. And how do you manage it?
It's a good question. it's something that's interesting that when you push on inventory in the same way, the same thing will happen. And inventory management is a science. There's math behind it. But the challenge that we face is that supply chains don't exist in a vacuum. Sure. So it's actually really tough to control all the different factors that can impact it. So that idea of if we push on it the same way, again, the same will happen. But it's really almost impossible to have the same set of circumstances exactly push on your supply chain again. So this is really what I'd call the allure of the field for those of us who are taken by inventory management. We encounter this set of challenges and we scan our brains for when we've seen this happen before. And if we're so lucky to have algorithms running our supply chain, they can scan through what looks similar to what's happened before. So we'll set up supply chains, generally policies, business processes to know when they encounter these sets of challenges and how to get around it. And we call that risk management.
Okay.
And I think risk and inventory can go really hand in hand. Of course, risk management can look at the pipe or it can look at the inventory that goes through. So again, if we think about those examples from earlier, a port is closed, a factory got closed, good risk management says that you'll have a plan in place when that happens.
Okay. What kind of plan? What kind of thing would you have in place?
Yeah, exactly. So if we think about our pineapples, you know, there's more than one port to come out of Costa Rica. And you'll have a number of elements where you'll say, okay, under these circumstances, the port usually closes. And then we'll track, is that going to happen? Do we think we need to get extra ready? And that's kind of plan A ahead of the issue. Then let's say it actually does close. You should have a plan in place to get around that. So hopefully your inventory is not stuck currently in the port. You haven't gotten there yet. You'll pick a different port.
Right.
That's going to be an easiest example. During the holiday season, in the realm of consumer electronics, it was interesting in my days at Microsoft, there would be what I can only call port wars, where different electronics companies would buy out port capacity.
Oh, wow.
And take it away from each other. So you'll get one big electronics company buying out all airplane capacity for the most important airport next to the Pearl River Delta, which produces vast amounts of consumer electronics. And then everybody else who produces can't fly anything out. Wildly fascinating, right? I think it's cool.
Incredible. Yeah, I had no idea.
And then, of course, that's pipe related. And so it's like, well, the pipe just got broken. So how are we going to move all the inventory? But these are the types of events that we really need to sit down and think what could happen, and then putting in a preparatory plan. So let's make sure we understand the leading indicators that would indicate we may need to put in our backup plan. And then when something does happen, to make sure we have a plan, there's no fuss about it. We can all just switch and we don't need to call in and have a war room and all this stuff. We actually just know what we're going to do.
Okay, interesting. And then, I mean, the two examples that you've kind of alluded to, the pineapple versus the hair clippers, they're also very different because pineapples have a short shelf life compared to hair clippers. So how do you manage that in inventory?
Yeah, absolutely. So something I like to remind people about is that inventory is cash.
Okay.
And so, you know, in cash, you could argue does or doesn't have an expiration date depending on foreign exchange and different elements like that. So we'll talk about cash for a second, and then we'll talk about shelf life or how long something can last. So thinking about inventory as cash. So if you look around you right now, maybe you're at home, maybe you are at the office, but look around and see the items that you have personally purchased that are around you right now. All of that used to be cash, your cash, and you have used that cash to buy these items. And most likely you've made great choices and everything around you is adding value to your life. But, you know, there's probably an element or two that you're thinking, gosh, I'd really rather have the cash at this point than this item. In a very similar way, imagine the inventory sitting along your supply chain used to be cash. It used to be the business's cash. And eventually, of course, it will become cash again. And ideally more cash than what it cost you. But this starts to get into some of the game of how long can something really last. So for right now, the inventory along the way is really just costing, it's money. It's just sitting there and it's costing you money to store it. You've got to pay for warehousing, et cetera. So inventory really is this proxy for cash, and most businesses in the world could really use more cash these days. So three ways to convert inventory to cash, and then I'll actually answer your question. The first one, we can buy less. So depending on the way that you use safety or buffer stock, how many locations you have, how many stops along the way you need to make, how large is your network, you can do this. You can actually buy less upfront. Now, depending on your business, you're not comfortable doing that. Maybe it's very important for your customers that you never go out of stock. So you have a tremendous amount of buffer stock, a tremendous amount of safety stock. Maybe you're very unsure about a demand signal. So you hold a lot of buffer stock. In the case of something like a pineapple with a short shelf life, we wouldn't want ideally to get too much buffer stock because we run the risk of having it not good anymore, which I'll address in a second. So buy less. Now let's say you've already bought it. So that's no longer an option. That's off the table. So second option to convert it to cash, you can sell it faster. And this is where the idea of inventory turns comes into play. How fresh is the inventory? Even if it's not produce, we can talk about freshness of inventory. You might be able to work out a deal with your supplier or your customer where you hold on to the inventory, but you don't have to pay for it just yet, which is a really ideal state to be in. But let's say that nobody wants that inventory. Let's say the pineapple is gone past its prime. Let's say there's a new clipper that came out that's $10 less. So it's actually like you've been way undercut by the market. Either you can sell it, nobody wants it anymore because it's dead, like it can't serve its purpose anymore, or it's considered waste for some reason. So either, you know, metal shavings off a manufacturing line is a good example, or this, you know, expired pineapple that may be past its prime. So then you have this third option of converting inventory to cash, which is you can use it for something else and get paid for it. This is really where this concept of circular business models come into play, which you and I have talked about previously.
Sure.
Of the idea that inventory, the definition of what is inventory, can really expand and can start to include what we would previously think just doesn't have value anymore. And there's a whole realm of business models coming up saying, wait, there's more value in that inventory. You can use it to do something else. So let's say you've got your pineapple that's either overbought, so you just have a bunch. So then you need to go find a special buyer, like somebody who's having a large distanced party and needs a lot of pineapple for that. Or maybe it's just past its prime, but you find somebody who actually makes cider from pineapple, something like this. You can actually use it for something else. So this idea that you can shift the use for it and change the idea of what is valuable. So when we think about shelf life, you know, you start to get into that middle reason. So can you sell it faster and do you need to? And in some cases, we don't want tremendously fast inventory turns, but in most cases we do. We do want the inventory to continue moving through the pipe. We don't want it to be stagnant anywhere. And that really is because it comes back to cash. You know, the whole cash to cash cycle is something that we'd love to get to zero or even a little bit negative. And that's where if you can work out a deal with your supplier, for example, that you don't pay them until after you've shipped it. It does actually exist in some parts of the world.
Wow.
You hit this nirvana state where you can keep that cash in play for your business. And so the options around how do I treat this inventory in terms of if it's going to go bad or not can help. You can look in those turns, really analyze your pipe, understand the options you've got. One, again, for grocery might be to have a different buyer that might be a lower end buyer where they move their inventory even faster. So something even like a daily market instead of a big supermarket. Maybe it's a less formal farmer's market where it would move that same day. So you'll take a little bit less money for it, but you know it's going to get moved and so it'll get used.
Interesting. Something else we've had discussions about in the past, Deborah, is the idea of digital inventory. What's that?
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor, lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today, influence the future.
I'm so glad you asked. digital inventory. So we talk a lot these days about digital supply chains, and I'll delineate here briefly between a digitally enabled physical supply chain and a truly digital supply chain where we're moving bits and bytes around.
Sure.
And this could look like all of the media we're all probably consuming more of these days. Kindle books,
podcasts,
Hulu, Netflix, podcasts, apps, emails, journal articles. And for many of us, you know, our master data, which I'll come back to in a second. And I started looking at this as I was writing my thesis 6-7 years ago, and I asked, is a digital supply chain actually a supply chain? Because at the time it was kind of an argument. It's an IT function. No, it's a supply chain. Who should be owning? Who should be making policy decisions? And I used the SCORE model as sort of that methodology anchor. And during this, I interviewed folks from, you know, from the Kindle team, from Netflix, from Sony, and really explored, you know, what does this even mean? And it's interesting because it comes back to the same concept of the pipe and what runs through the pipe. And at the time, I don't know if I think they still do this, Netflix would constantly analyze the bandwidth allowance that you had wherever you were, whether you were mobile or at home or on high-speed internet or whatever. And they'd actually change the quality and size of what they would send you. And often the viewer had no idea that your pipe would change multiple times in a 30-minute show. But but very likely you didn't even notice. And so that to me just really is fascinating, because our pipe is just dynamically shifting. But what goes through in reality is the same part, quote unquote. It might just be a little bit of a smaller version of that. And so this idea of digital inventory, I still think it really is inventory, and the methodologies and strategies we use for physical inventory, whether it's segmenting, how we manage it, and the diligence can really apply. And one, again, if I bring that idea of master data, as I was talking to some of these folks who I interviewed for this thesis I wrote, when I had asked, you know, what is your inventory? And they would say it's master data. And if you really think about a digital file, it really would be all of the master data around that file. And I think all of us probably have been part of a master data cleanup effort at one point or another. And the diligence that we place around inventory policies and making sure it's fresh and cared for, and we don't have a big pile of inventory sitting in a warehouse somewhere, if we can apply that same diligence to master data, it's the same problem and we're still paying for it. So imagine a big pile of master data sitting on a server somewhere. So not a physical warehouse, but a physical server. And you're paying for it. I mean, we pay for space, we pay for data, we pay the power bill. And so it's still costing you money, especially as you start multiplying this over all of the different elements that we're managing. So this idea of can we use the smarts from inventory managers to look at this digital world and really optimize? And of course, I just think this is absolutely fascinating. But what kind of a digital inventory have you consumed today, Tom?
Oh, well, tons of podcasts, loads of tweets on Twitter, for example. I mean, that's digital inventory, right? You know,
definitely.
So one of the things that fascinates me about the whole digital inventory, and this is stuff I've been talking about for over a decade now, it's the carbon footprint of it. And, you know, people think that a shift to cloud computing necessarily means a reduction in carbon footprint. And of course, that's not true. It's not necessarily untrue. It's the usual thing of the answer is it depends. So, yeah. You know, if you move your infrastructure, you have a data center, for example, and you decide to shift it all to the cloud, then you're shutting down your data center. But if your data center is in France, where, you know, 90% of their electricity comes from nuclear power, and you shift it to Amazon and it goes into AWS in Virginia, where, you know, it's mostly coal powered, your carbon footprint has might likely gone up, you know. So looking at things like that, I've always found fascinating. Now, when you look at the different cloud providers, you've got the likes of Microsoft with Azure, you've got the likes of Google with Google Cloud, you've got AWS are the three big ones. And of those, Google and Microsoft are doing really well on their measuring and reporting of their carbon footprint, and AWS are obfuscating as much as they can. So, you know, if I were advising people on carbon footprint for cloud, I would say go to one of the first two and avoid AWS. I don't know, is that kind of stuff you've looked at as well?
I have, yeah, this idea of digital waste. Mm. And I actually recorded a podcast, episode 16 of the Supply Chain Revolution, on digital waste. And it's really fascinating to me because the cloud is a physical place. Mm-hmm. And people often don't think that. They'll say, oh, I'll just chuck it in the cloud. I don't have to worry about it anymore. But there's a real physical repercussion. So if we take something frivolous like your vacation photos and you store them twice, in two different folders, just to be safe.
Sure.
That is double the servers, double the power, double the manufacturing of those servers, which use rare earth metals, double the maintenance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so something I explored was the different types of digital waste, whether it was, you know, never intended to be created, or it was created and no longer useful. It needs a good old fashioned Marie Kondo clean out. There is an element that digital goods can actually degrade. So where you store this data over time, it actually rots, called digital rot.
Sure.
Really interesting couple of elements actually came out of Johns Hopkins a couple years ago, like 6-7 years ago. And something that I think about is, two come to mind. One on these dashboards that we have running in the office all the time that look really cool, in hallways, and we can see where our freight is. But it's unlikely anything is actually being done with that information. It's really just to look cool in the hall. And so, but if that's real-time pings constantly around the world, that's actually a pretty heavy drag. So I always advise just make a recording and just play it on a loop, and it looks good enough for that day. And then really focus your efforts on what people are using to make real decisions. And then that brings me to the second element I'm thinking about is these algorithms. So to train a single AI is the same carbon footprint as 6 cars over their life, not including manufacturing of that car. One algorithm to train it. And because it just takes a tremendous amount of trial and error, and machine learning takes time. And so be really sure that you definitely need artificial intelligence for whatever it is that you're doing. And then push hard on how accurate do you need it to be. Something I talk about with the team of data scientists that I get to work with is when we talk about cleanliness of data, because nobody's data is clean. I've never heard anybody go like, guess what? My data is perfect. We need it to be as clean as we need for what we need to do with it. And similarly, we need our algorithms as accurate as what we need to do with it. Sure. And sometimes, those last couple points of accuracy, really there's a huge hockey stick in resources needed to get to that point. So I'd really advise folks to tone it down a little. We've heard so much about flight shaming through these last couple of years. Of course, now no one's flying. But flying really got highlighted as a tremendous drag on greenhouse gases. And it is, but it's about 2% of overall greenhouse gas emissions in the world. And you know what else is 2%? Is the internet. So our collective internet usage is the same, but we don't really walk around saying like, close your browser tabs, stop sending spam email, which ends up really having similar impacts to giving up a trip or two. So I think this topic of digital waste is one that will get a lot more discussion in the months and years to come. We think about value stream maps, that concept of finding waste, but applied to digital flows, I think is really interesting and will necessarily require the mind of a supply chain professional to sit together with the IT folks who really build us the pipe. Sure. They help to kind of build this infrastructure, which of course, again, as an inventory nerd, I just think is wildly fascinating.
Deborah, we're running way over time because this has just been a fantastic conversation. Is there any question I haven't asked you or any topic we haven't touched on that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
The only one I leave people with is something that actually you and I again talked about last time, Tom, is to think hard about when your inventory isn't useful anymore and what are you going to do with it? And the knee jerk today is to throw something away, or to maybe harvest it for parts. But I encourage you to Google the term circular economy, and the basic concept is to keep an item at its highest value for as long as possible. And if we do that, we can infuse a ton of money into the economy, make new jobs, and gosh, we really need that right now. So the only idea is just think about your inventory through its life and the idea of giving it new life and multiple lives, and then we'll all make more money and the planet will be happy. And it's a great way to kick off a week.
Fantastic. Deborah, if people want to know more about inventory management or about yourself or about supply chain revolution, where would you have me point them?
Absolutely. So I've got a website, circularnomad.com. That's circular economy plus the idea of being a digital nomad, which of course right now is on hold. We've got supplychainrevolution.com. I'm active on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. So please come and find me, Deborah Dole, and circular_nomad. Inventory is my favorite topic. So anything you want to chuck my way, I'm more than happy to share.
Brilliant. Deborah, that's been brilliant. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.